Welcome into Bucks Insider, presented by Verizon. Casey Phillips here with senior writer and editor Scott Smith. And did you know there's Hall of Fame stuff to talk about? Not typically the time of year. And, you know, we just had all the excitement with Rondé last year. I feel like people thought we might have a little bit of a gap.
I thought so.
In Bucks Hall of Fame news.
I'm glad we don't.
I am too. And so here is some fun, if people have not heard yet, Hall of Fame news as regarding to the Buccaneers. Tell us what it is.
Well, 3 years ago, they started a program that they call Awards of Excellence. And it is designed to recognize some big-time contributors in the NFL who are not players or head coaches. And they're in five categories. There's assistant coaches, video professionals, trainers, equipment professionals, and PR people. And actually, there was only four, and then they added the video one the second year. So this is just the second year of doing video. So what it is, for those people who are selected and given this Awards of Excellence, it's very much like they're going into the Hall of Fame. They get a plaque. Their plaque goes up in a special wing in the Hall of Fame describing their careers. And within their own careers, they're recognized by their peers as being like pioneers and some of the most important to ever do those jobs in the NFL. And this year, the Bucks, former Bucks, got two of them. Monty Kiffin as one of the assistant coaches and Dave Levy, who was our video director for 29 years.
That is unbelievable. I love this idea of not just recognizing players and coaches like you hear about all the time. There are so many people that make up the NFL to be what it is, and I think that it is just an amazing honor, and just it's so cool for those guys. And it says a lot about the Bucks that they already have a couple people like that the league was ready to recognize as pioneers.
They don't have team reporter category yet.
So sad.
But
would
listen,
you count as a PR person?
I don't know, man. I was only in that job for like 8 years. So so about these two guys, of course, Monty Kiffin, obviously a great choice, one of the best defensive coordinators of all time. He was the Bucks defensive coordinator for 13 years. And the cover two already existed. It wasn't like that Tony Dungy or Monty Kiffin invented the cover two, but they perfected it to the point that everybody now calls it the Tampa two. They don't say cover two that often anymore. They say the Tampa two.
Yeah, when they name something after you, you know you've probably figured it out.
Pretty much, I think we were ranked maybe 28th on defense in 1995. Then Monty Kiffin arrived in 96. We improved to 11th. And then over the next dozen years, we're a top 10 defense virtually every year, which that type of defensive sustained excellence is very uncommon. Oftentimes a team gets a good offense, and like think of maybe like the 49ers right now, and they can continue that and be pretty constant for a good number of years. Defensive results tend to vary quite a bit more. To be top 10 for like more than a decade is incredible and hardly ever seen. And the 2002 defense that led the Bucks to the Super Bowl is one of the best single season defenses in NFL history, and nobody argues with that. Monty Kiffin had an unbelievable career, and it's so great that he's one of the first assistant coaches to get this honor. And then you have Dave Levy. Like I said, this is only the second year, and they did three the first year and three the next year. So he's one of the first six.
One of the first six people.
There's been a lot of video directors.
Yeah.
But he started with the Pittsburgh Steelers when he was 12 years old.
12 years old. Because nothing like some good child labor to get you started in your career.
His dad was real good friends with their video director, who also is in the Hall of Fame now. And then he came to the Bucks in Ray Perkins' second year, 1988. I think he was 21 years old. He's believed to be the youngest video director of all time, and then he held it for three decades. And I encourage you, if you'd like to read more about that, I have a story up about him on the website. And just, it wasn't just, he was innovative in his field in that, you know, during his tenure, the job went from film, and, you know, reels of film to tape, like beta tape, and then to digital. We went from analog to digital.
And a lot of changes.
He was one of the guys that was instrumental amongst the fraternity of those video directors in, you know, leading the NFL in that direction. So just a phenomenal career, and I'm glad he got rewarded for it.
I love that. Shout out to Monty Kiffin and Dave Levy. Very excited for them. All right, and you know, last week we had the NFL league meetings.
Yep.
We talked about some of the things we learned from Coach Bowles, Jason Light, Joel Glazer spoke, and we talked about especially the two kind of biggest rule changes that had gotten all the attention with the quote-unquote hip drop tackle and then the idea of the kickoff rule changes. Those, of course, got most of the attention. They're not the only rules, though, that were changed or affected or voted on.
Yeah, there were
quite a few. There were a lot of them. So we figured we'd get into a few more of the other ones that, even though they didn't get all the attention, they are still impactful.
Yeah, one of them was the challenge rule in Detroit. That was the team that proposed it. The team can propose a rule change, or the competition committee can. In this case, it was the Lions. The previous rule was you start the game with two challenges, a coach does. And if he uses both of them, he has to win both of them. He has to successfully get the call overturned to get a third challenge. If you lost either one, you didn't get a third challenge. Now the rule is you only have to win one of your first two to get that third challenge. So that seems kind of like a big deal, right?
I agree.
Not really. Hmm. Because I think I looked it up.
I should have seen that coming, by the way. I was like, I agree.
Rope-a-dope. Yeah. I think there were seven games last year when that could have happened. Seven times when a team won its first two challenges. And it just, like, look, I've got Todd Bowles here. Here's his record for challenges in his 6 years as an NFL head coach, which obviously includes 4 years with the Jets. You know, last year he threw four flags the entire season. Never twice in a game.
Wow.
So...
But maybe if this rule is different, do you think that changes the strategy?
No, not really. No, and, you know, he's thrown 25 flags in six seasons. So that's roughly four a season, which is roughly one every four games or so.
So, yeah, his tenure here, if you look at it, he's about 50%.
Yeah.
This is a fun project for you, Mr. Statsman. Do we know where that ranks?
And I read a whole article. It's about 16th, 17th, something like that. He's just under 50%, like 48%. So he's about middle of the pack.
Yeah.
But I guess you could look at it kind of the way you did. On the other side is that he's about 50% in his career, and now this rule means you don't have to go 100%. You have to go 50% within
the
game.
So it seems.
Yeah, you could make the other side of that argument there.
Okay, I like it. How about a couple of the other rules? I know there was a quarterback rule.
Well, okay, so I think it's been a real good change that the NFL made. They made it around the COVID year, although it wasn't because of the COVID. It was just a new CBA. You can elevate two players from the practice squad each game, but you can only do that with a specific player three times during the regular season. Well, now they made it, if it's a quarterback, a bona fide quarterback, not just somebody you're saying, hey, this guy's our third quarterback.
He can also throw the ball.
Yeah, he can be elevated an unlimited number of times to come up and be your emergency third quarterback. So to me, the impact there, and it may not be great for some of these guys who are trying to get the third quarterback jobs on teams, is I would think most teams will keep only two quarterbacks on the active roster because every week they can just elevate the third quarterback.
Right. You risk losing them to someone else, but
that's true, and that's, yeah.
That's usually, yeah, the thing that keeps people from, you know, that's why we had a Ryan Griffin on our active roster for so long, was the fear of him getting stolen. But if everyone has this chance, maybe it's less likely they get stolen.
Yeah, here. But you make a very good point, because that's exactly what happened last year. We started with John Wolford on our practice squad, and about 7 weeks into the season, the Rams, who were having some quarterback issues, wanted to sign him back, so to entice him to stay, we promoted him to the active roster. But if there's no danger of that, I would think you'd keep that guy on the practice squad the whole year.
Which obviously the Bucks value him. Jason Light himself is breaking the news of him re-signing, so you
great.
Know they care about him. How about IR? What happened with that rule?
Well, there was this rule that, so you're in training camp, right? Somebody gets hurt. If you put them on injured reserve before the cuts to 53, then they cannot return. They can't be designated for return. Mm-hmm. They're out for the entire season, period. So if you have a guy that gets hurt and you want to put him on IR, but you think you can come back with him at some point during the season, you actually have to keep him on the 53 through the cuts mm-hmm. to 53 and then make another move a day later. He has to spend at least a day on the 53-man roster.
Interesting.
It's kind of a silly little loophole, and so somebody made the common sense suggestion of, hey, let's not do that anymore. So now you have two guys, and that's probably going to be enough, because it's usually maybe one guy that you're dealing with. You have two guys that on the day of the cuts, you can put them in IR, but still designate them for return.
Okay, and then finally, the trade deadline. Tell us what changed about that.
Yeah, this is another one where I'm going to throw cold water on it, because I don't think it's that big of a deal. I know that one team had proposed moving it back to after week 10. Previously it was after week 8. Well, the one that passed was after week 9, so it's one more week. And literally 5 days in this case, because last year was October 31st, and this year it's going to be November 5th. I don't see that being that big of a deal. Also, in terms of the Buccaneers, I mean, how many times do they make deadline deals during the middle of the season? What do you think?
It doesn't feel like that often, especially as someone who came from the NBA before the NFL.
That's always,
a lot of that happening in the NBA, and then it comes to the NFL, and it feels like it's hardly ever a thing.
Well, so Jason Light became our GM in 2014. Which means he's been on the job for now over a decade, and he's made four in-season trades in that decade.
Wow.
So, and three of them were trading people away.
Yeah.
And I don't think you could, I mean, Steve McClendon was actually a little bit before the deadline, because we've got the injury to Vita Vea, And so he made that deal a little beforehand to shore up that spot, and that worked out. That worked out for those Bucks, and that was the Super Bowl year. So that was a good deal. No, it wasn't. Sorry. That was not the Super Bowl year. Take that back. It was 2018.
delete.
But that ended up being a good deal, but the others were all trades away of guys that, you know, either didn't pan out or, you know, weren't necessarily a core player like Jonathan Casillas.
That's so interesting. All right. Well, that is going to do it for us on this edition of Buccaneers Insider. And again, we did a little early this week because the Bucs cruise is happening this week. If you're going on it, we're excited to see you there. If not, make sure you stay tuned for it the next time and all of our coverage of it this week. I think it's going to be a blast. So we'll see you next week.